This is HamRadioCast.com, the radio show about amateur radio.
Yes, it is, and we welcome you aboard HamRadioCast. This is HamRadioCast number 18 already, and my name is Mark Jensen, Kilo Bravo 2 Echo Golf Bravo. I had a great weekend, and we talked to, on Friday, Dave, KZ10, as he was making his mini expedition out to what sounded like a beautiful cottage up in Maine. And so we'll be hearing from Dave probably a little bit later today as he tells us the results and how the antennas and radios worked and give us the rundown on his fun weekend. Sounded like a great weekend of radio family and friends, so sounded pretty good to me. And let's see, we're running a little bit warm today here in Florida. It's supposed to get up to about 90 degrees in central Florida today, and so it's starting to feel a little bit more like summer than it has been. We've been in the 80s for the most part. But very special Ham Radio Cast today because this morning, via the Telos One line, we have author and publisher, business owner and entrepreneur and radio amateur and shortwave guru and a whole bunch of other things. So we want to welcome Bob Grove to Ham Radio Cast. How are you today, Bob?
I'm doing well. How are you, Mark?
Oh, things are great here.
And well, we are up here in North Carolina as well. We're looking to temperatures in the 70s probably, perhaps 80 or so today, and possibly some rain and thunderstorms this afternoon. But other than that, it's been an absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous spring, and we had a very light winter. It gave me an opportunity to get outside and do some antenna experimenting.
Yeah, the winter was just beautiful. I never knew we had a winter here in Florida.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it was wonderful. As you say, great antenna weather. That's a true ham talking. And as so many hams right now, I'm kind of space restricted, as we say, or
yeah,
something
right.
That. Yeah, and so you know, it's really a challenge. But I guess it's it also adds some creativity to it because you kind of find out you really maximize what you have when you have to.
Sure, you do. And of course, naturally, as founder and publisher of Monitoring Times Magazine, I get a lot of email and slow mail as well. But the question that comes up the most is, how can I optimize my antenna? And this is a logical question, too, because next to the rig, of course, the antenna is by far the most important accessory in the shack.
That's right. Yeah, no, the best radio is no good without a decent antenna.
That's right.
And, you know, the funny thing is, I was just talking to somebody via email, so this interview is very timely. But, you know, several people have asked this, and most recently, just yesterday. Gentleman has a Grundig 700, which I'm sure you're probably familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so it's an okay portable. It's certainly, you know, not the best radio in the world, but
sure.
He's starting off, and this is what he has, and you know, looking to optimize the antenna. So far, he was just using the little, you know, internal telescoping whip. Of course, mm-hmm. not getting very good mm-hmm. results. And, you know, trying out, I guess somebody recommended to him a G5RV, which I don't know
very
if that...
Very popular.
Yeah, I don't know if that was the best, maybe first antenna to get, but, you know, I gave him some information and some links on cutting a dipole and,
right.
you know, getting down to basics, you know, kind of understanding
sure.
what's happening.
Shortwave receiving antennas, naturally, are very, very forgiving, and it's the transmitting antennas that we have to prune a little bit more, but there are a lot of different venues that a person can pursue in terms of shortwave receiving antennas.
Now, somebody receiving, how important is the counterpoise? In other words, how I'm in that situation. Would you just go and throw out a random piece of long wire and hook it to a piece of coax, or just even hook the random wire to the radio?
Or as a matter of fact, I've done a lot of experimenting with over the years. I've been licensed for more than half a century, and so I do a tremendous amount of antenna experimentation, and very few of my experiments have been around counterpoises. I have tested them. I have tried them. Mm-hmm. And with receiving installation, a counterpoise is actually, so far as I'm concerned, totally unnecessary. Now, there'll be some people who immediately will probably take affront to that and say, no, wait a minute. Now, with a counterpoise, you can have thus and so. But the fact remains that you are not launching a signal, you're receiving one. And if you put up an effective single element receiving antenna, you really don't need a counterpoise. The most important aspects, there are two or three really important things to think about in a receiving antenna. One is that you get it free and clear of electrical interference. And this means outside of the dwelling, outside of the shack, outside of the building, and away from power lines. Mm-hmm. If there are power lines nearby, you need to have it pretty much at right angles, perpendicular, not parallel, where you'd have your maximum inductive coupling to a power line. A height is only important with a horizontal wire. Naturally, with a vertical, you can start from the ground and go up. For shortwave receiving right now, I'm using two verticals. One is an amateur radio, the Gap Titan, which I use on the ham bands, which is a no counterpoise, no ground vertical, and also an antenna that we just came up with, and I had an article in Monitoring Times, how to build your own, or for $14.95 to buy ours, called the Flextenna, which is roughly 24 feet of flexible wire that you can just suspend from a tree branch and bring it in on the center conductor of your choice of coax. Once again, no ground or counterpoise is necessary at the antenna, and it's an extraordinary receiving scheme. So getting it away from electrical interference, getting it reasonable height, these are the important things.
Right. And, you know, a lot of people are still plagued with having to put it in the attic, as
yes.
I had mine. And you're so right, because what I eventually did, and somebody just told me about this, I should have put two and two together, but, you know, I just used some magnet wire, you know, very, very
right.
thin. You can almost not even see it.
Yep.
And at the end of that, just made a small eyelet and put some 80-pound test fishing line on it.
Right.
And secured that on the other end and just soldered the, both ends to the coax and, you know, made my own little 20-meter antenna. But, you know, the beauty of it is that I just used that little RG-174 coax.
Mm-hmm.
And you really couldn't, unless you were really looking for that antenna, even about 20 feet away, you couldn't see it.
That's right. And another way to get away from that is not only using the thinner wire, but to use a gray or a light blue, some of these earth tones that blend well into the sky. And this, of course, makes the things virtually very inobvious and virtually undetectable unless you say, there's an antenna up there. See if you can see it.
Right. Yeah.
One of the things that people, there's one characteristic about modern receivers that is very frequently overlooked in antenna planning, and that is that all modern receivers have very high sensitivity. So what this means is once you get a hunk of wire outside, an enormous amount of wire isn't necessary. Once you overcome the receiver's own noise floor, now you're getting an increase in signal to noise. But if you use a larger and larger antenna aperture, that is capture area, you're not only picking up more signal, you are also picking up more atmospheric noise. And so the net result of a large antenna that's omnidirectional versus a small antenna that's omnidirectional at the shortwave frequencies is that you get a higher S meter reading, but only because you're capturing more noise along with the signal. And if you had the smaller antenna versus the larger, your S meter would drop, but you would still have the same amount of signal above the noise because both drop uniformly.
That's exactly right. And boy, I have experienced that so many times myself.
Sure.
And, you know, I've even made the recommendation, you know, for example, I was using a Kenwood TS-2000 that has a, you know, real nice preamp in it, but on HF, I would never run the preamp because the preamp would almost always inevitably, you know, it would bring up the signal, but it would bring up the noise floor with it. So, you know.
Exactly. And another thing that especially our listeners out there who are using portable shortwave receivers, portables also have extraordinary sensitivity, but they have one uniform vulnerability that's extant, and that is that they overload easily. And when you overload, then the problems begin to compound. You start hearing signals where they aren't. You'll start hearing multiple places for one station on there. You know, what we call intermodulation or intermod. It's an overload characteristic, and this is one of the terrors that you encounter by taking a pocket portable and putting, you know, 400 feet of wire on it and thinking you're going to hear the world. Well, you do, and you hear it all at once.
All at the same time, all on one frequency, yeah. Yeah, how true that is. And especially, you know, with the scanners, I think that's although, you know, that's not as much of a problem as it was, I guess, you know, back in the olden days of scanners, and especially, you know, the some of the poorly designed models or when they first came out.
You have to remember in the early days of scanners, all manufacturers were in a new realm. They didn't really have an awful lot of background. They didn't have a lot of experience in the design of these susceptibilities of VHF, UHF receiving equipment. And I remember once when Electra was the manufacturer of the Bearcat scanners, I used to fly up to Indianapolis once or twice a year as a consultant for design on the new Bearcats. And I was walking across the parking lot for lunch one day on one of those expeditions with the chief designer at the time. And I said, you know what these people keep asking for on their scanners is a preamp. He said, they don't need a preamp. They need an attenuator. And he was absolutely right. The tremendous amount of overload on these scanners that had a very narrow, what we call dynamic range, the ability to respond to the weakest signals and to the strongest. They indeed responded to the weakest signals, but boy, they would just come apart on strong signals. And once again, you'd start hearing these signals all over the band that weren't really there.
Now, was this back in the BC 250 days or 200?
Yes, it surely was. That was a nice piece of equipment, the 250, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, one of the finest that, not Uniden, but Electra ever put out, of course, was the BC 300. That was another very, very fine scanner.
Oh, that was great. I actually had one in the, you know, I sold it, and, you know, like so many things, you know, we sell our old vinyl as CDs come out and,
that's,
you know,
right,
get rid of the old tube equipment when transistors came about, and then you kind of kick yourself for getting
right
rid of
afterwards
all that old stuff, but because everything old, you know, comes back again.
It does. There's a loop, and you know, I find a great comfort in knowing that there are so many active antique radio collectors out there, antique radio clubs, publications. Mark Ellis's column in Monitoring Times is right on top of one of our most popular, and his is the one that is on restoring antique radio.
Okay. And yeah, that is very popular, and boy, you know, I mean, if you talk about eBay, you take a look at what, you know, there are people that are restoring these old vintage Hallicrafters.
Yes.
And they just look, you know, beautiful, like they just
they
came out
incredible.
Of the box.
I have great admiration for anyone who has the not only just the motivation to do it, but willing to take the time to do it, because it is time intensive.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be arduous because, you know, they go right down to, you know, redoing the aluminum and polishing everything.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's gorgeous. When these receivers come out, they look like they just came off the manufacturer's assembly line.
And, you know, actually, this vocal strip that I'm talking to you through now, you know, this is brand new. Well, it's about almost a year old now. And, you know, it's got a 12 AT7 in it. Or,
right,
I'm sorry, 12 AX7. Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of funny how, you know, all the now everybody wants tubes in their equipment. But, yeah, it's a lot of fun. And, you know, what would you recommend as far as... you know, I doubt I did it the wrong way. I just kind of fell into the hobby when I was a little kid. But if you were just starting off today, what would be the staple, let's say, as far as starting off? Would you start reading right away? Would you jump right into a radio? What would you do if you wanted to
listen? If I were interested, first of all, of course, there are, at one time, there were three entirely separate radio interests. Ham radio, shortwave listening, the SWL, and scanners. But now we find that most of the people who are hams are also into shortwave listening and scanning.
Right.
We find that, for example, Monitoring Times, which was put out well over a quarter of a century ago in an effort to find the reader who was interested only in shortwave and scanning and not necessarily ham radio, that now at least half of our subscribers attest to being licensed amateur radio operators. So I was glad to see that this kind of came together. So this is a roundabout way of saying that if I were finding someone, for example, a young man or young lady came to me and said, I've heard about radio. Can you show me what this hobby is? I'd first, of course, bring them right in front of where I'm standing right now, in which I have shortwave receiving equipment, amateur transmitting equipment, and scanning equipment as well, and show how each of these works and what it does. In other words, just a basic exposure to the hobby. And that's the first way to start. And you'll see then, I think, a little hand go out towards one of those dials is going to be particularly appealing. And so to give an answer that would be across the board depends on the specific interest of the individual, I would say.
Right, because, you know, yeah, exactly. And you defined it well, because there are, even once you divide it up, you know, there are just so many. And then once you get into it, say you choose shortwave listening or scanning, you have so many options within that realm. You can just keep busy for a lifetime.
Oh, yeah. The shortwave, the SWLs are generally broken into the broadcast listeners and the utilities monitors, those who enjoy intercepting and monitoring two-way radio communications.
Now, is Larry Van Horn works with you, or you know him very well.
Larry's our technical editor at Monitoring Times.
Now, is he a real, let's say, a utility nut?
He does some. His wife, Gail Van Horn, also writes our shortwave, or is in charge of the editing of our shortwave receiving section in Monitoring Times.
Okay.
And so she's primarily the broadcast end of that couple, and Larry is the utilities two-way man.
Okay. Now, you do a lot of military, or is that where you specialize?
I specialize in military and government. I'm interested in those. We find, of course, more and more of that being evasive now due to privacy and communication. So a lot of it's going digitized now.
Right. But I guess there's still an amazing amount that's out there clear.
Oh, yes, it sure is.
Just like the old TVRO stuff.
You know, it's interesting. For a while there, even with scanning, there was, of course, the Electronic Communications Privacy Act, which was passed in 1986, which forbade folks from intentionally listening into telephone communications, which were ostensibly private, even though you could tune them in on most any scanner if one end of it was attached to an antenna. And so as a result, we saw a lot of digitization coming along from a number of companies, including, of course, Motorola and their digital encryption and DVP, digital voice privacy. But gradually, and this is the interesting part, gradually Motorola said, why don't we try to make more of a standardization, a uniformity in systems so that they can interconnect with each other, but they can still enjoy the privacy. And they came out with the Association of Police Communications Officers, APCO, APCO, came out with what they call their Project 25, which is a digital system. And it's being adopted all over the country now. But the interesting aspect of it is that the person who developed APCO did not develop it for privacy, but developed it for better communications quality. And so as a result, one level of digitization is open architecture, and anybody can build it into a scanner and listen to it when they go digital.
And that's exactly what Uniden did, right?
Yes, exactly what Uniden did in their most recent products that have the APCO 25.
Yeah, and you know, I've been into I'm 41 now, so I've been into it for probably a good 36, 37 years, and I just listened to my first APCO digital signal about a month ago. Yeah, and got the 790-6D unit and scan.
Yes.
And boy, what a difference though! You hear those signals, and you right away. I mean, obviously, you know it's digital, and so you know. But what surprises me about that is that the same thing happened when trunking came about is that a lot of people were saying, "Well, this is the end of the hobby. You know, I'm getting rid of all my scanners."
Oh, I heard that a lot.
And you know, yeah, every new technology that comes along, probably it happened in when single sideband came out and with all the
That's
AMers,
right.
And
everything was dumping downhill at that point, wasn't it?
Yeah. And and then digital came out, and oh, that's the end of the hobby. But you know, somehow the hobby adapts, and
yes, it does, or the people do. That's for sure.
Yeah,
they have to.
Exactly. And it's kind of like a quote from Jurassic Park. You know, life finds a way. And
yes.
So we always. I think the hobby. You know, it's there, and it'll always be there. It'll just be a matter of, you know, maybe we have to catch up. Now, the FCC also has this new restructuring or rebanding coming up, and I know that's going to affect some scanner users. But
yes, it will. The refarming of the VHF and the UHF spectrum, making it, because of the requirements of course, increasing numbers of users of the spectrum and only so much limited spectrum to go around. At one time, they kept usurping unused spectrum from one agency to give to another, but now what they're doing is narrowing the requirements, the spectral requirements of the licensees, so that they don't take up as much space in the spectrum. Therefore, they can put two or three times as many people into the same amount of spectrum. And this, of course, is the refarming that's going on right now by the FCC. And earlier scanners, you're absolutely right, the earlier scanners are having a problem following this because of two things. Number one, the scanner is going to be stopping on frequencies which are no longer assignable, and even if they're close, the audio is sometimes distorted because you're hearing sort of a one sideband of an FM signal, which is quite distorted. And the other is, even if you get on these channels, their deviation, which is the FM equivalent of modulation, is much smaller, and so the audio that you hear is way down. And you have to turn your volume up for those stations transmitting with a narrow band, and when you then get on another one, it blasts you out of the room because it's using the old wider deviation schemes.
Right. And but yeah, that'll be very interesting. But I could almost imagine, just like when the 800 megahertz band came around, that I can envision converters or something maybe being available for some of these scanners that don't cover that. But I guess we'll have to wait and see. But again, yep. I guess the prices have come down on scanners too. So
they have come down enormous. If you stop to think, the average handheld, for example, that you can buy out there, whether you get it from Radio Shack or from Uniden or buy either product from Grove Enterprises or our competitors, they have a price range typically of anywhere from $200 to $300. And if you compare that with what was available for that price back in the 70s with scanners, for example, just 30 years ago when scanners were in their infancy but finally coming out with frequency synthesis, the capabilities, the speed, the frequency range, just about all of the characteristics are vastly superior. And yet when you stop to think about the buying dollar compared with them, it's an incredible ability to get far better technology now at really much less cost with the buying power of the dollar.
Right. And, you know, so we see new things like, you know, the new Uniden little 396 handheld with...
Oh, that's a fine unit.
Oh,
sure is.
You know, beautiful text display and menus.
We can't keep those in stock at Grove Enterprises. Everybody's buying those the 396 and the new 996, which is coming out of the Uniden. The base model of that is an absolutely extraordinary scanner. Absolutely extraordinary. We have a beta test unit here. It's astounding.
Wow. Yeah, I've seen the pictures. It looks amazing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this little handheld that, you know, is smaller than most has up to 6,000 channels.
Yep.
You know, that's amazing. You know, when we were talking earlier about the Bearcat 250, what was that, 20 channels?
That's probably right. The old 210s and so on were in that range too. Anywhere up to 16 channels was typical for those things. And of course now you get the channel capacity into the thousands. Of course that reflects not only the developments of RF technology, but digital, the parallel computer industry's digital technology as well.
That's right, yeah, because, you know, trunk systems themselves may have more than 16 frequencies. So
yes, indeed.
Amazing. Well, Bob, let's see. I told you earlier on that I'd keep you for about 10, maybe 15 minutes. We're already at about 25. But I told you in that email, you know, once, you know, hams get talking, it's kind of hard to stop. We could go on for hours. But
it's been quite a cue, though.
Yeah. But, Bob, it's been very enjoyable, and I've got to say that, you know, over the years I've read Monitoring Times and spent countless hours enjoying that, and I know people all over the world have, so we thank you for that. And
my pleasure, Mark.
I've also done business personally for years with Grove Enterprises, and it's always been a pleasure. So
well, we try very, very hard, both with Monitoring Times and Grove Enterprises, to satisfy our customers any way we can.
Yeah, and you know, that's so important, because you know, sometimes you shop around and you do Google searches and you find something for, you know, $10 less, but I've got to tell you, you know, you have to be careful sometimes.
You sure
where you pick
We've
things
had
up.
That experience ourselves.
But anyway, it's been a pleasure having you on Ham Radio Cast, and I want to thank you for joining us this morning, Bob Grove, and you can visit him on the web at www.grove-ent. That's grove-ent.com. That's Grove Enterprises. Take a look for scanners, shortwave receivers, antennas, accessories, books. They've got it all there on your newsstand. Take a look for Monitoring Times. It's out there. And so thank you, Bob, and
my pleasure,
you have a great day.
We'll do this again sometime.
Definitely. I would love to do that. I think we're going to get Larry Van Horn on here as well.
Good. He enjoys this too, just like I do. Well, 73, Mark.
Okay, 73, Bob. Thanks a lot. All right, and I think we will try to get Bob back on here. Certainly a wealth of knowledge, and I thought it was great to just get a general overview this morning. And as he suggested, maybe we'll try to get him back on and get into some of the more detailed aspects of the hobby, and kind of dissect and talk about some very particular aspects of scanning, shortwave listening, utility monitoring, the spectrum, antennas, radios, certainly a wealth of knowledge there. I just got popped into my Gmail box not too long ago that Dave, KZ10, our ham radio correspondent up in New England, he was returning from the trip in Maine, but he had a little bit of a problem in that I guess what started off as a sore throat has turned into almost a total loss of voice. So I'm going to try to get Dave's email up right here. He did give me a few other bits of information though to pass along, and let's see what that is. So, okay, yeah, scratchy throat turned in almost complete loss of voice. So, sorry about that, Dave. That's, I hope you brought your CW key. Let's see. So, we are going to try to catch up with Dave as soon as his voice is back. He did want to let us know that he got over 200 QSOs and hit about a half dozen countries, mainly using 17 meters through 80. Looks like he pretty much covered the gamut. He used the CW, PSK, single sideband, Ritty. They had five antennas and all at various times, and so it looks like he had a great time up there despite the sore throat. Probably turned to CW, Ritty, and PSK at the end. So okay, Dave, get well. And so I think that'll about do it. This was a little bit longer version of Ham Radio Cast. Let's see, we have an official hot clock time telling us about 28 and a half minutes. And but I thought it was great to get the little bit longer interview in there with Bob. So we hope you've enjoyed it. Have a lot more coming, and some more information about some of the radios in the shack, as well as more interviews on the way. So 73 from Kilo Bravo 2 Echo Golf Bravo, and have a great day.
Podcast Station is the official composition software of Mark Jensen's PME. For creation, editing, inserts, and posting, put the fun back into podcasting with Podcast Station. Try Podcast Station by clicking the link on podsquad.com. That's podsquad.com. This has been a Studio 1A production. The media creation enterprise for Pod Squad, PME, and Ham Radiocast. Studio 1A puts Macionics in the mix.